cost, but I'm not sure the specifics of that.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just brief comments. As we go through these different proposals, obviously, we've got to find a way to fund this, and I don't think it's any secret in this body or the other that anything going on the property taxes tends to be problematic, including any fee, and that's why we're sitting here today. So at least from what Representative Hansen talked about, I would like us to further explore the deed tax part of it. I think that does make sense. Most of the properties in my area, farms and my own property, businesses, have almost doubled in value in the last 10 years. And, you know, to say $36 is some hardship for folks either refinancing or buying these properties that are worth quite a bit, I don't think is as egregious to them as seeing the $36 a year show up on their property tax bill. So I think we should do more exploration of that. Certainly lottery in lieu and lottery funds I think are appropriate. But again, when we get to, and I'm not saying it's bad, but when we get to the levy authority for watershed districts, yes, they can do that and give them the authority to do it. But again, that's property taxes, and we'd also have to give counties the levy ability to give to maybe Bowser or some other delivery entity, because obviously, as you can see by the map, it doesn't cover the state like it should. But I just want to throw in a couple words of discussion why they're here, because I think that's appropriate, and we need to find some other way to fund this, I think.
Okay. Any other questions on Representative Hansen's proposal? Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And somebody, and maybe Representative Hansen can tell me, right now when we buy, sell land, property in rural Minnesota at least, we have to identify wells that are on the system, septic systems. Can somebody tell me legally, you know, what all's included? I mean, so there is a connection here between this and the water that we use. And
Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis, I just know when I transferred property, I have to sign that well disclosure form, whether there's any wells there. And then when there's one that's abandoned or for capping, there's a seller responsibility there. I don't know the statute specifically, and maybe there's somebody here from Health, the Department of Health, that knows that. But I just know from my personal experience, there's a tie in there that is needed.
And Representative Hansen, on this sheet that we have with several items, we have it listed as the deed and mortgage transfer fee accumulates to about $36 million. Is that what you believe this would be, the estimated amount that you bring in?
Actually, the $36 fee,
fee
would raise $25
million. $25
million? And that's on the shaded bar graph that has that in the lower right-hand corner.
Okay, very good.
And I would just note, I'm willing to work with people on trying to improve this or provide any other solution.
Okay. Representative Guineas.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pennis is right to bring up what she did. I think there's also a sewage inspection, too. So it's a double tie.
Okay, any other questions on Representative Hansen's proposal? Representative Johnson, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, can you say a little bit more about the change you made in the water restoration projects with the watershed district? What does that entail again?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, when I had this drafted, the assessments was there. It was written in, and it was an error. In terms of later in the amendment, you see assessments being paid for with my lottery in lieu of. My intent is for restoration projects that they would be able to levy for actual projects to provide conservation practices on the ground rather than doing the assessment.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Appreciate your help.
Thank you.
The Representative Wiganius, you have a proposal that you'd like to put on the table.
I do, Mr. Chair, and I think it could work extremely well with Representative Hansen's proposal. And what I am saying is, instead of using these dollars in the deed tax for going into a fund that is then appropriated to as a revenue stream to our bonding authorities, I would substitute and say, let's use Representative Hansen's proposal for the actual on-the-ground work, the kind of work that Bowser's traditionally done, and to cover the wastewater treatment facilities, let's just do the old-fashioned thing of regular GO bonds. And I would make the argument two. One, the GO bonds are actually, in general, cheaper to issue than revenue bonds. And in this particular case, I can only assume that that would be absolutely true because GO bonds are backed by the full faith and credit of the state. And these revenue bonds are based on a statutory stream of money. So we could, for less money, get more bang for the buck. And that's one thing. Secondly, traditionally, we have funded wastewater treatment with general fund bonds. I mean, that's the way we've always done it. And what I am doing is borrowing from something we did in the landfill cleanup bill, which we appropriated at the time we did the landfill cleanup bill, $90 million to be spent over a certain number of years. I don't remember the years, but it was many years for the landfill cleanup bill. And similarly, here I am saying we would have $500 million to be done over 8 years, so we can talk about the numbers here. But the theory is that we would put the money on the table so local units of government would know the money is there, they can go after it, this would be their matching fund. And so it essentially is their matching fund. Now, $500 million over 8 years is a little more than $60 million a year. That would do two things. It raises a little bit more than the bill does right now. And so I'm saying we've got to do some prevention up front. We've got to quit just doing mess-up cleanup. The bill calls for about $40 million, as I recall, a year for a number of years. And this would be 60. If we were to do this, we can cut in half the money we need to raise. We can say then we need to raise about $40 million through fees. And it just, I think, makes our life easier. And we're just doing the same old thing we've done for years and years and years.
Okay. And Representative Wagenius is referring to the 0566 amendment. Is that Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to have some testimony on this from the Public Facilities Authority. I see Mr. Coleman's here. If he could, my question would be: how do you anticipate this being implemented if we go this route?
Welcome, committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Kerry Coleman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority. Mr. Chairman and Representative Magnus. I think this would work to have a steady chunk of money for wastewater infrastructure funding. But I went and put it all in the wastewater infrastructure funding program because that really supplements two loan grant combinations, and probably the most we can do is probably 15, 20 million max a year. If you really want to do wastewater projects and even some non-point, you need to also plug in the Water Pollution Control Revolving Fund, which in that, because that's That's the base funding source, provides loans, and then the WIF, the Wastewater Infrastructure Funding Program, supplements the loans to keep the costs affordable. To get this to work, you'd have to change the WIF program drastically and not have it as a supplemental assistance to keep projects somewhat affordable. You'd have to create some other mechanism so you could probably do more market rate loans and then use this to supplement or write down the cost of the projects. But I think it'd be easier, and I also think the demand for the loan program is could easily, you know, use a lot of money put that way. And I think the G16 proposed putting money in the revolving loan fund as well, because you know, that's probably doing about a third of what needs to be done on an annual basis now, and we need an influx of funds. I don't know if that answers your question, but
well, Mr. Chairman, I've got a follow up, and a bit of a personal note. I, Mr. Coleman, did you ever dream growing up in Slayton, Minnesota, my hometown, with me, that you'd ever be doing something like this?
No, that's when I took this job. They said I'd be here for 2 years, and that was 20 years ago.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Wiginia.
If I could, I made a mistake when I handed out this amendment. This is an earlier version of an amendment I had. Same amount of money, but I did have it available for more things, and including stormwater runoff. So I would have to go back upstairs and find the better amendment, because I'm using an old copy here. But I would be perfectly willing to rewrite this to make it work for all the things that needed to be done. The basic thing here is that it is bonding authority paid for by the general fund.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Wadjian, if I could just follow up. I think if you just plugged in water pollution control revolving fund right before the wastewater infrastructure fund, because that does do stormwater. That does wastewater, based on PCA's priorities. It would also free up some other funds that currently go in the wastewater that can be used for non-point. You know, so it gives us flexibility.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions that Representative Guineas on that proposal? Okay. Let's see. We have another. I know, is Representative Lanning here? Great, that was super. Would you like to, I believe your proposal is the 0775?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And if you would explain that proposal and how it involves Clean Water Legacy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Appreciate the opportunity to appear before you. And I want to thank Chairman Osment and the committee for your consideration of the Clean Water Legacy Act. It's important legislation that we need to be trying to work out here in the state of Minnesota. Like so many of us, I've had a problem from the very beginning with the original proposal in terms of the fees that were proposed. And so I and others have been working to see if we can find other ways in which we can meet our financial need with regard to this. This proposal, 0775, I think is a good alternative for us to consider. I have felt for a long time, being close to watershed management, that we need to get watersheds throughout the state more organized than many of them are currently, and also we need to get watersheds more involved in addressing water quality issues. But they need a mechanism in order to do that, and what this amendment would do is to authorize within each of the 10 basins that we have in the state, if 50% of the land area in that in a particular basin is organized into a watershed, that they would be able to have a 2-mil levy that would be imposed that would help fund both assessment and implementation with regard to the Clean Water Legacy Act. I think this is not a mandate. It's an option. I think, in a way, it's a carrot for folks. We all know that local units of government, local communities, are going to have to come forward with ways to fund the elimination of impaired waters, the improvement of our impaired waters, but they need to have a mechanism to do that. Understand that Representative Hansen distributed a map showing the portions of the state that are currently organized into watersheds. And when I first saw this map, I was rather surprised and amazed that we've only got about a third of the state that's really organized into watersheds. And folks, when it comes to water management, we have to do a better job than that. That is woefully inadequate if we're going to take care of Minnesota's water like we need to. I come from the northwest part of the state in the Red River Basin, and we've had for some time a similar authority where a levy is imposed, a 2-mil levy is imposed on all the property within our participating watersheds, and half of it goes to projects within that watershed, another half goes to basin-wide projects, and it seems to me that that is an established principle that this amendment would extend to other parts of the state. And from my perspective, this has worked well. I know the sensitivity with regard to property tax involvement. My constituents are used to a property tax levy to support water management practices in my district, and it's an accepted way to take care of it. We all know that the whole assessment and TMDL planning process is not only an initial $80 million, but when it comes to implementing solutions here, we're talking about much larger sums of money that are going to be needed, and local communities need to have a way of being able to raise that. I think this is an option that they could adopt in order to do this. And I also want to mention, in connection with this amendment, that I think we also need to go in hand in hand with this a matching grant program that would be a bonding initiative. I carried a bill which was adopted in part in this year's capital investment bill that would provide a matching grant program to local communities of $2 million to help deal with water quality issues with regard to wastewater treatment. And I think we need a much larger scale on this statewide in order to take care of our need. And this amendment would enable the local community to be able to come up with the matching funds necessary to make this happen. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I offer this for your consideration.
I want to thank you very much for participating in the work group and to offer this. I know that you have to go to a vote now on taxes, so
thank you. I'm
we'll
sorry.
Hold off any questions on it. Thank you. The members, I have a Representative Junkie.
Well, I was Representative.
He had to go for a vote, so
my question, and it's a general question, you probably couldn't answer anyone, Mr. Chair, is well, I appreciate the amendment. We are looking at the reality of the map, and you know, how long could we before it take to organize the entire state into watershed districts, and you know, I don't know that it's a realistic time frame at this point, but it's certainly a goal we should be shooting for. But.
And I think in my conversations with Representative Lanning, that's really kind of the context. He understands that it's not something that we could implement right away, but it is something he'd like us to be have out there as an objective and really going towards organizing a state by watersheds and pushing watersheds into organizations, those that don't want to do it. Let's go to Mr. Jim Mulder from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Been working on a diligently on a project. Oh, we'll have a go ahead and hand this now. We have a new spreadsheet that's be handing out that includes the proposals that we've had some discussion on here before, and now adding the Association of Minnesota Counties proposal to that list. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Mulder. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Minnesota Counties. With me is Ms. Annalee Garlitz. She is our policy analyst that works in the environment and natural resources area for our association. Our association has been working and reviewing the issues around the Clean Water Legacy Act for the last 2 years. And we wanted to make it clear that we certainly support and we strongly support the goals and priorities of the act. We obviously recognize the need for our state and for counties to be part of a solution to the federal mandate. As we started working on this project and as we've looked at the proposals that have been presented, we set up priorities that we thought were important for us. The first of which was, and I think our members strongly feel, that the property tax system, the system that we use today to collect property taxes in the state, should not be used to collect for state-imposed fees and taxes, particularly in an environment where we're talking about turbocharged truth in taxation, property tax freezes, and levy limits. Our folks just do not see that it is a good idea to confuse the taxpayer even further. Our current system is very confusing. If you ask, and when we talk about our truth in taxation hearings that we have today, we believe that between 40% and 60% of the people who show up at truth in taxation are more concerned about the value of their property, which the hearing has really nothing to do with, than they do about the property tax that are being levied by each of the local governments. So we think at the very beginning of this, it doesn't make sense to use that. Now, the second part of our reason for not using is the technical aspects of it. The way the bill has been proposed, it would require counties to collect a whole new set of data that doesn't exist. We do not know which properties have septic systems or don't have septic systems. We can make assumptions that improved properties do, but they have to be, and in all likelihood, an improved property is either in a municipal system or has a septic system. Our challenge, for instance, would be places like Forest Lake, where some properties are in the municipal system and some properties have septic systems. In our property record system today, we do not know specifically, all across the state, some counties do better than others, but we do not keep a record within our land records system and our property tax records system that identifies those. So we would be required to somehow identify each septic system and where it is and who and all that other kind of stuff. The second priority that we felt was needed as we talked about this is there needed to be a clear nexus between the fee and the services that you're delivering. And we think that clear nexus is partly because of, as a citizen, when I pay money for something, I really want to know what I'm getting back. Our members have talked about, and we've had the experience in the past, and a lot of our decision-making now is based on those experiences, like the solid waste fee, where we expanded the sales tax on garbage. And we put the sales tax on garbage, and it was collected by the state. And the idea back, and I think it's 10, 12 years ago, was this was going to be distributed to counties. We were going to collect it at the county level. It was going to be distributed back to counties, basically to manage solid waste in the state. We now collect, and it was all supposed to come back for that purpose. We're collecting about $50 million now, and about $12 million is now returned to the local governments for the purposes of solid waste. There is a level of cynicism at the local government level of creating this program, and we know it is well-intentioned. We know it needs to be done, but there is a level of cynicism about whether, down the path, what will happen. So that nexus between what you are paying for and what you are getting in return, we believe, needs to be very clear for the citizen. If it is clear, the citizen is more likely to endorse it and more likely be willing to participate in the program. The third issue is the Clean Water Legacy Act should encourage local ownership of the program. One of the things that we have found in our most successful programs at the local level, whether it be solid waste, whether it be in septic systems, whether it be in health care, whether it be in human services, it is when that the local folks have an ownership in the program, when they participate in what's happening and they participate in how to best serve the citizens of their
of their communities. What we find in county government, solutions that happen and work really, really well in Kanabec County sometimes don't work particularly well in Candio High County or in Hennepin County or in Rock County. Each of our counties are very uniquely different. In Couchiching County, for instance, about 86% of the property in Couchiching County is a wetland. How you deal with wetlands in Couchiching County is very different than my home county, which is Renville County, where they have drained, and sadly, statistic is it's 104% of the wetlands in Renville County have been drained. We've never quite figured out how that statistic was made, but that is the statistic that is used. Well, how you deal with wetlands in Renville County and how you would deal with them in Couchiching County are very, very different. The same is true in this, in the area of ISTS. The kinds of systems and the kind of program that would be most effective in Lake County would be a very different program than what I would do in my hometown. Very different kind of geography, very different kind of place of how you would want to be dealing with it. In knowing that, our preferred method for paying for the Clean Water Legacy Act is the State General Fund. But I think we are all realistic in knowing that, and from a county perspective, it becomes a very difficult thing for us to say that, because typically the balloon is only so big. You push in one area, it pushes out in another area. We, as partners with the state and delivering all sorts of services, often pay the price if all of a sudden we're moving money around. Unfortunately, when there aren't enough resources, we are looked for as part of the solution. Certainly we went through that in 2003. We've gone through that on a consistent basis as counties have been part of the solution for solving many of the state's general fund problems. As we looked at this, we felt that we weren't going to get involved with, and we have not taken a specific position on the wastewater treatment fees that are put together through that will be collected through the utilities. At some level, there is a nexus between the collection of those fees and the services that are going to be provided. Certainly, as you are part of, and unfortunately, and probably the weakness is that it's not a direct nexus, in that there is no guarantee that the $36 you might pay in my hometown is actually going to come back to my hometown. But it is going back to that broader purpose of trying to work with the wastewater treatment systems and trying to improve the performance in that area. Our focus has really been on the septic system part of this discussion and this debate. We believe that one of the foundations that we need to have as we move forward to this is we need a strong septic system program. We need a relatively, on a performance-based, uniform system. We need septic systems to be performing at their utmost level and a high performance, whether, again, you're in Lake County or whether you're in Rock County. So our goal was, and one of our truly interest was, is how do we incent, how do we create an environment where all of our counties participate in creating this foundation that is needed to truly meet the needs of the impaired waters of our state. We believe that what we are recommending is the creation of a program that really begins that process, and we see it as the first phase of what is a two- or three-phase program. Within this first phase, from a county perspective, and I need to point out, this is really focusing on what is a narrow piece of this broader issue, is the issue on the septic systems, is we believe that we should begin an assessment. Now, in the original proposal by the G16, it would have required counties to do some sort of inventory or at least a census of septic systems. In fact, we were very grateful that they even identified $1 million that they could give to us to do that. Our folks would probably have described that as an underfunded mandate. Not unfunded, because there's $1 million there, but $1 million wouldn't go very far among 87 counties to identify the number of septic systems that we have in Minnesota. We believe by putting it into a five-year program, we can achieve a much better level of identifying what's the worst of the worst. What's the stuff out there that we really need to be worried about? Where are those straight-line pipes? Who are the folks that are really, in a sense, thumbing their nose at the rest of us by not being good stewards of the land and not being good stewards of the water. So we believe that our assessment program could be done in a, basically it's a three-phase assessment, and we would do assessments at three levels. The first level would be, or a level one assessment, would be for those systems that are less than 12 years old. Generally speaking, systems that are less than 12 years old have been regulated by and have had licensing and have certification. It's been a program that's been in place. And if the certification and maintenance records are in good order, we should just do a review of those records. We should make sure that that's all in order. We should be reminding the citizen that this is an ongoing process, reminding about what the counties would be developing standards for your pumping standards and all that kind of good stuff. The second level would be for those systems that are more than 12 years old, that have never had gone through that in the construction process, but if you do have good records, if you do have records that are up to date that you can demonstrate to, again, and we would ask for them if they can be provided, because generally we don't keep these records. In a few counties, there are counties that have gotten programs in place that are working in this kind of environment. In fact, it's a model, that's part of the model that we've tried to emulate here, that if you have those records and if your system has been checked and you have an ongoing maintenance program, you would work at a level two. Each of the levels would have a different fee attached to it. Now, in the materials we passed out to you, the fees were $50 for a level one, $90 for a level two, and then our third level would be a level three assessment, which would require, if you cannot produce the records, if you have no records to give to us, it would really require us going out and actually doing a visual assessment of what's there. This is not a certification process. It's not a process where we are going to certify them, but we need to have a visual assessment. One, where is it? Where is it on your property? And then from a visual perspective, can we see that this is the kind of system that is probably one that we need to inform, or we need to work with the landowner to bring it up to the level that we would want it to be. In all of the assessments, we would identify those septic systems that are in shoreland areas, they're in lowland areas, they're in more susceptible areas, so that we can figure out kind of what is our highest priority and how do we prioritize the work that we're going to be doing. We would expect that we would generate under this program somewhere between $55 and $80 million over the course of the 5 years. Now, that works out to be, obviously, somewhere between $11 and $20 million. As compared to the proposal that has been put forward by the G16, which generates about $19.4 million per year for this purpose. The good news is we also, you don't have to pay us for some, or there's not as much money that has to be distributed to the local level or to counties, because one, you'd not have to give us the $1 million for the administrative fees, you would not have to give us $1 million for the census, and you would not on an ongoing basis provide a revenue source for the low-income loan and grant programs. Counties would retain at the local level the 85% of the generated revenue and put it into a dedicated environment fund. This would not be used for the county's general fund. This would be used for the purposes that we'll talk about in just a minute. 15% of the money collected would be sent to the Clean Water Legacy account. Obviously, it's our feeling then that all of our citizens need to participate in the broader aspects of this program, the broader assessment programs, the TMDL process, the other processes that are going to be going on. And we believe by sending it there that the counties will be able to do that, or the citizens will be able to do that. We also believe that through this program we will leverage a whole lot more of local dollars because of the ownership, the local ownership part of this. Once counties start down this path, they are, and you have a local ownership, the local citizens will be willing to participate at a higher level and in other ways. Part of what we would be responsible for doing would be creating and developing a sequencing and operations plan that would set priorities for meeting impaired waters goals,
essentially these are the things that we do in our water plans today. It would really institutionalize the ISTS as part of our water plans. What we believe would happen within our counties, and we're seeing some evidence of that in counties today, is that we can bring it under one umbrella. We can work more closely with the SWCDs. We can work more closely with the watershed districts and have a more coordinated approach to how to best meet these needs. One of the biggest complaints, I think, from county officials across the state has been the wide variety and number of groups you have to deal with whenever you're dealing with a water issue, whether it be the Bowser folks, whether it's be an SWCD, a watershed district, whether it's the Army Corps of Engineers, the DNR, the PCA. By the time you're done, they get worn out. And we believe that this is one way that we can begin bringing a better umbrella for that project. We think that there are four things that we could spend our money on. We would recommend first is to perform the assessment process. Do the level one, level two, and level three assessments. We believe that we would use that. That's the initial use of that money. In addition, we believe that we could use it to establish a local revolving loan fund. Not just a new fund, but really finding a way. And when I talked to our president, Harlan Mattson from Candyuhi County, he talks about the confusion that people have because right now there are two or three different places that you can get money to do ISTS on a loan. Each have different kind of criteria. Each have different kind of paperwork. Our vision is that by creating it at the local level, we can find ways to leverage those other dollars into a more united or uniform fund that people could have a single application process and we could have a single entity that's working to try to get the most effective program possible. The third thing that we believe is to address and meet the need of local non-point protection and restoration projects. We know that as waters are identified as being impaired, local governments are going to have to be involved, whether those are city governments, township governments, or county governments. We also recognize, and I think our members are very realistic about the fact that at some point there will never be enough money coming from the state of Minnesota to do all of this stuff. As much as everybody may want to do it, the political reality is that it, at least in the short term, we don't see that happening. So it is going to require a local participation, and if we already have, at least, and it's a very limited local revenue source, but at least we can figure out how to begin to do the process. We can figure out how best to solve the problem that is maybe identified in Kitson County or in Brown County or in Houston County. We can best identify what's the first steps that need to be taken. I think there is a significant amount of frustration that when it's only a top-down response, when it's only responding to the top-down kind of things, there isn't the kind of ownership that we would like and that we think is most successful. The fourth thing we'd be able to spend this money for out of this dedicated account would be to provide education. Finally, we think that the second phase of this is it allows the Clean Water County to develop a more clear business plan. I think one of our challenges as we've looked through, and it talks about money being spent and it talks about money being raised, In our view, at this moment in time, there's just a lot of work that needs to be done, first on a more clear business plan. But then we need something more long-term than what would happen in the 5 years. We think that in this five-year phase one, we can create a base from which to work. We will then have the data. We will then have, we can define how big and how bad the problem is. Today, we do not know. We absolutely do not know how bad the problem is with septic systems in this state. And we believe that by setting this foundation in place, that we can come back and we can take a much longer view about how do we deal with it, how do these septic systems relate to the other systems that are out there, are there new opportunities to create new kinds of septic systems? We can test out the performance-based part of this because in some places, drain field systems are the best. I grew up in a place that drain field systems are probably a pretty good way to do it. I grew up in Renville, Minnesota. Drain field systems don't work particularly well up in Lake County because they don't have enough land to make a drain field. Mound systems probably work better there.
So how do we come to those conclusions? How do we work at it? We think that this is a great way to make the beginning, I think, in that foundation. We, at the end, and I will close, Mr. Chairman, and be happy to answer any questions, we think that the proposal that we are putting forward was certainly not comprehensive in nature, in the sense of how to deal with the entire Clean Water Legacy Act. It does resolve and meets the needs of some of our members. I can tell you the response from one of our members who's on our executive committee, he who had been very concerned about the Clean Water Legacy Act and how it had been proposed, and his what he said after he worked with us on this proposal was he actually said, you know, I can go home and sell this to the folks at home. Our folks, if they can see that we're going to be doing something with this money, we're going to make it better here in my community, are going to be willing to do this. And I thought that that was a tremendous endorsement of what we were doing. Because if our members can take this home to their communities and sell it and get the commitment and get the buy-in and get the local ownership, that's the first step in a successful program. And in fact, if you look at the history of the programs that the counties that we are very proud of, that is typically the key ingredient is the local ownership ingredient. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Okay. On the spreadsheet, the bottom number that we have where it says gross estimate and you have 70 to 76 million, is that your 5-year total?
No, that would be the yearly total if you spread our 5-year total out on a yearly basis.
On a yearly basis?
Yeah.
And your 5-year total was?
Our 5-year total is anywhere from 55 to about 80 to $85 million. And it really depends. We don't know how many level 1, level 2, and level 3 assessments we'd end up doing. There would be places that are high growth areas that would have fewer level 3 assessments because of the fact they've been done in the last 10 to 12 years. There are other places that would have large numbers of the higher assessment. I will also tell you the numbers that we picked for the assessment, there's no magic in those. One of the things we tried to do in those numbers is the people who were good actors should pay less than people who are bad actors. If somebody has invested $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in a septic system, they should be treated differently than those people who have not invested in their systems. We think, and we don't know exactly what that spread should be, but we do think it's something that needs to be considered.
Questions for members? President Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions. First of all, so the way, just to get this right now, you're talking about an ongoing $36 fee, and then on top of that, a one-time assessment fee. Is that right?
No. On septic systems, there would be no $36 fee. The $36 fee, from our perspective, would continue if you are on a wastewater treatment system. My understanding is that on residential septic, that is an error on that fifth one, is that I should have been erased. I apologize.
But, Mr. Chair, you're talking about an ongoing $36 for municipal water.
Yes.
And then an additional one-time assessment for my septic tank?
No. If you are in that system...
I live in the country. What do I have to pay under you?
You would pay the one-time fee.
Okay.
The one-time fee of a 50, whatever the three numbers are.
I would also suggest that, and I don't know how we get around this, but my guess is most of them won't be level one or two. I mean, my house was built in 1980, and I have upgraded my drain field, but I'll be darned if I could probably find my records today. My system was pumped in 2000. I'll be darned if I could probably find that. I mean, I can tell you what I've done, but again, I am a little worried that just kicks me right up into the other, the higher assessment.
Generally speaking, I think our best guess is we think it's probably about a third. That we're, generally speaking, anybody whose septic system was built after 93 is probably going to stay in level one, just because of the rules that were put in place in 93 and 94. if it's that kind of the next phase back, depending on what kind of development you've had, if you have a septic system rural development, you probably are going to stay in septic in that two. But if you haven't done anything for a long time, you probably jump to level three. Again, the amounts that should be on each of those levels, if you are a level one or level two, you would actually be paying less than if you'd pay the five times 36 over 5 years. If you're in a level three, you would actually have to pay more. But we think that there is, the nexus between the services provided, because if we go to a level three, we actually are going to have to begin the process. And part of the reason we don't want to do an investigation or inspection, is that if we do an inspection, that actually triggers some things that have to happen within 10 months. We don't think that that should be part of this process. We think that that should be a part of the county ISDS plan.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that. My other question, then a couple others. The dollars you collect, county by county, is that proportional to the problem that is out there, county by county? Because obviously, the further west you go in the state, the less dollars will be collected because of population. Is that less dollar amount proportional to less of a problem, or are we still not addressing what we need to address, and we have lack of dollars county by county to address it because we're more rural?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that is one of the biggest challenges that we've faced, is that there will never be enough money to pay for everything that we want to do. But what we did think is that with the proposal that we're putting together, it does, every county will be able to pay for that first level of assessment. Or for whatever assessment they do, one, two, or three, there's enough money to pay for that. And so counties will not be subsidizing that part of it. But what it does do is it will, by going through that process, it will allow local communities and counties to get education about how best to meet the next part of their needs. Hopefully, the other parts of the program that talks about the municipal waste programs, those other parts of the programs, will be providing some of those other funding streams. But in all likelihood, in some of our most rural areas, they're not going to be generating huge dollars, but what our hope is that at least it does generate and make it more clear what the problem is.
And Mr. Chair, just back to the septics again. So one-time fee, if you're a rural landowner, you have a one-time inspection fee to assess where you're at. Is that just for active septic systems, or what about abandoned farm sites, abandoned systems, non-active systems? Are you trying to inventory them, or just where people are living?
I think we're looking right now at just active septic systems.
And lastly, Mr. Chair, are you working, have you run this by, and are you working with the cities on this? Obviously, the $36 is residential, municipal. They're the ones that are putting in the systems that we need. Have you worked, sat down with them? Where are they at on your proposal? Are they buying in? Are they going to come holding your hand and saying, this is it, this is the deal?
Probably. We've had a discussion at the D16 where we presented to them. We have not had a specific discussion with the cities. We did, in our proposal, we do lay out that for those cities, would be asked to run the same program in their city. So if you are a city that has both a municipal system and septic systems, they would be required to do the same kinds of assessment. What our goal would be is, and we think it would be, is to have those cities and counties to be working together, in a joint kind of program, and trying to keep the funding straight.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your testimony, Mr. Mulder. I'm just trying to make a connection, Mr. Chair, between this issue and the TMDL issue and the extent to which this will create the kind of effect that we're looking for. Do you have any thoughts on that matter?
Be an interesting connection to me, too, Mr. Johnson, because this presentation has been as if septic systems were the only problem out there. And in nowhere in a testimony did I hear anyone talk about watersheds. It was strictly political subdivisions. And the real problem that we're trying to deal with in the Clean Water Legacy is how do we deal with the watershed issues, and how just because the county line is there doesn't mean that's where the water problem starts or begins. And so I don't, and this is certainly, if the TMDL does not include identify a problem that is directly related to septic systems, they would be funding a cleanup of something that was really not part of the requirement in order to come into compliance with the Federal Clean Water Act. Not that this isn't a good thing to do, but it's actually the kind of thing that I wish had been done back in 1989 when we had the Clean Water Act of the state of Minnesota established. County should have been doing this a long time ago, and it would have been a very good proposal at that time.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to that question. In the ability of what we could expend for, it would be addressing and meeting the needs of local non-point protection and restoration projects administered by a local public agency, city, county, town, joint powers board, SWCD, watershed, etc. In fact, one of the examples that was used as we were putting this together came from our president, Harlan Mattson, who is in Candy High County, who's in the Minnesota watershed, talked about the ability for those 37 counties who have been working together for the last 12 years to help clean up the Minnesota, that if there was a priority project, this money could also be spent down in New Ulm, if that's where the we could get the most bang for the buck, and that counties could participate in that. That's part of the reason why we think we could leverage more local dollars.
Other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
You,
I really appreciate the work you put in on it. It's very, with regard to the how we're going to be dealing with septic systems, I think this is very good information and gives us some potential direction to be able to go in, especially that local buy-in. We are running short of time this morning, and I want to get the issues on the table with regard to funding proposals. I know that is Mr. Davis here, Leslie Davis. Mr. Davis, I believe you have another funding proposal that you you usually talk about, and is that what you wanted to present to us this morning? Why don't you get that on the table and before we reach our adjournment time here?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Leslie Davis with the Earth Protective Environmental Group. I do have a handout for you in a moment, but, you know, I miss opportunities a number of times to comment on the policies regarding this particular, what they call the Legacy Act. And I despise this piece of legislation because I despise from where it comes. When you see the Chamber of Commerce appear on something, you know that the short end of the stick is going to be handed to the public. And how did all these waters get contaminated? Well, by the Pollution Control Agency supposed to be administering this stuff. And I heard the Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency tell Senator Marty's committee that one of the reasons we need to pass this bill is because a fellow wants to build an ethanol plant near the Minnesota River. And in order to go into the river with his effluent, he couldn't because the water was impaired at that point, and he'd have to spend a lot of money to go upstream. And if we had some kind of plan underway that was being spoken about, he'd be able to save that money from going in upstream. So well, that's what this is. This is a developer proposal. This is a dumpers plan. This is not the children, you know, legacy for the future and so on. I object to that word being used because these are the same children that we sell high fructose corn syrup, caffeine laden soda to in the schools in order to find the support to schools. These are the children that wait in the contaminated air in Minneapolis with asthma while we have air alerts in the city of Minneapolis. This is the legislature that refused to put through legislation that would have banned atrazine and things like that. It was a good piece of legislation and that didn't go forward. So there are a number of issues that are troublesome to me. One is these half a million or additional million more people that are going to come to the Twin Cities or the greater area of Minnesota, and where they're going to go. Development is already rampaging all over the place in Prior Lake, and stormwater is cutting away the channels throughout the watershed districts. I'm concerned about that. To take close to $1 billion over 10 years and not go upstream to get the pollution, whether it's the mercury from the dental labs that are coming into the sewage plant, or to get the phosphate upstream, and to deal with these kind of issues here so that, as Mr. Johnson said, that the purpose of this thing is in order to improve the impaired waters so people could discharge into them, because now no expanded discharge can go into impaired waters, and that's what this is about, a development program. So I object to this being called the Legacy Act. And there's no federal mandate to do this. The feds haven't pushed Minnesota to do this particular piece of legislation. This is the Chamber of Commerce coming forward. So I'll give you a funding plan here, if you would, that will not only solve this problem, but will solve the entire budget problem of the state. We'll be able to balance the budget and fund the schools, and I'll go over it a moment with you, if I may. This proposal will bring in $2 billion, new money into the state of Minnesota, and nobody bleeds by bringing in the $2 billion. And this particular proposal is to charge people that use public underground water, because we're talking about our water, our resources. That's why somebody would kick in $36 in order to pay to protect the water, because they're our resources. So if you have a bakery, you pay for your dough. If you have a computer, you pay for your ink. And if you use public underground water, you should be paying some pennies a gallon for it. You shouldn't be taking public water for practically nothing, turning it into toxic slop, and then dumping it into public waters. So what my proposal, in a nutshell, calls for is a mechanism that's already in place. The Department of Natural Resources is collecting money for underground water through groundwater appropriation permits. The only problem is giving it away. So all they have to do is raise that to 2 pennies a gallon. And these folks here on my list that take over 100 billion gallons of water, I've just given you a sample of who some of them are, they would pay this 2 pennies a gallon and would have $2 billion. And if you want to kick $80 million into this worthless Clean Water Legacy program, I wouldn't object to that, nor would anybody else, because there'd be lots of money for lots of other things. You know, the Metro Sewage Plant, they could have rehabilitated their facility for $40 or $50 million, and they squandered $160 to $180 million. And instead of stopping the mercury from coming to their facility, they're putting on mercury control equipment in order to capture it. I don't know, we're going backwards on this kind of stuff. Trying to get it downstream is the worst place you could possibly go to try to capture the pollution. So you have companies like 3M, they just came out with their first order, but they're making zillions of dollars on our back. They poison the air through the hazardous waste incinerator. They take public underground water for practically nothing. Over 3 billion gallons of our water for a thousandth of a penny. So that's my proposal to put on the table. And there's the $2 billion for Minnesota to get all squared away with their money. And then if you implement the energy conservation plan, there's another $2.1 billion from a squandering heating the street and leaving lights on through the middle of the night. So if we implement an energy conservation plan that Amy Lovins of the Rocky Mountain Institute in Somers, Colorado talks about, minimum of 30% savings on our electricity. So that $7 billion worth of fuel that we import, at 30%, we wouldn't have to do that because we'd reduce our energy consumption through installations of efficiency technologies, and we'd save $2.1 billion, reduce pollution by 30%, and we'd go after that upstream. So you're not going to clean up the water because it's impaired with mercury, and the mercury is in the water and it's methylizing. So that's my pitch. Here's the story, and I hope you approve of this increase in our underground water fee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Davis. Any questions here? Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Davis, I was just wondering if you had suggested this proposal to any of these companies and what their reaction would have been.
I haven't presented it to the companies, but I have to the Department of Natural Resources. I've contacted numerous legislators. Nobody seems to want to have picked up on it. But now that we've got a little money stress here and looking to get the money, why would I go to 3M and ask them if they want to pay 2 pennies a gallon for the water that they're taking for nothing? They have these guys hustling around the Capitol all the time to get as much as they can and give as little as they can so that they could please their stockholders. So I'm not a 3M stockholder, and I don't think I'm a fan of theirs either.
I think it's vice versa.
All right, any other questions?
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. That's heard you campaign on that same issue, so that's, everything has its time, potentially. Any other questions that members had before us? Members, we're going to next week come back, and we have We have four testifiers that are still on the list. If they'd like to continue testimony next week, if you'd recontact staff and verify that. And also have, if you're from the information, to my knowledge, we have all the proposals now on the table with regard to the funding mechanism. The one that we did not talk about today is the one I talked about at an earlier meeting. It is a document that's in your staple together. It has HF 826 Clean Water Legacy Funding on the title. That is the proposal that I presented on the improved properties. I presented that when I had the delete everything amendment, so I didn't go over that again today. But that is also on the table. And it's also shown on the spreadsheet that you have with the five proposals. So if you'd have any refined thoughts on how to try and pull this together, that would be very helpful. Next week we will continue this discussion, and we believe that we're going to try, when is, do you think our next meeting, next Tuesday? Next Tuesday, I believe, is when we're going to have our next meeting, next Tuesday morning at a regular scheduled time. Materials that you want to keep, please put in your folders or take them with you, because it will not automatically provide them for you next next meeting. With that, we are adjourned.